Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more UNITY. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
Yes, yes, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we are here to talk about the fussing and fighting, but we also want to get some solutions to the issues that we face. Voices from the Battlefield features folks from many different battlefields who are fighting against racism, against all forms of oppression, but today, there's no guest, there's me. And from time to time, I might have to do this, you all, because as I told somebody, sometimes I just get full and I need to say something and not interfere with one of my guests or my guest with the S on it. But, you know, for example, today is the anniversary of when little Jane Doe was found. And this is the headless child who's murder mystery has never been solved. So that is still an issue for our community. 1983, on the west side of St. Louis, a headless child was found. Her head has never been found, and so she's never been identified. That is a problem. Now, I wrote about this over the years from time to time, and even compared it with what was happening in Kansas City, Missouri, because they also had a headless child. It was a toddler, but that community rallied. They end up finding the culprits and brought them to justice. Unfortunately, the culprits were the parents of the child. So, but it got resolved. Our baby Doe, they estimate like maybe between 10 and 12 years old. And we could never rally the community around that child's disappearance. And I never understood why. So if somebody's got some theories, I would be very open to hearing what they might be. So when I was writing about it, and I remember one of the titles of the column was The Tale of Two Cities, and I was talking about what Kansas City had done and how they got, you know, rallied around the child, and then what we had done. And I wasn't trying to shame us. I was really just trying to inspire and motivate us, but it just never happened. And at one point, the child was buried with no headstone, so there had to be money raised. And a group of high schoolers from Livingston, Illinois, raised money for the headstone. So it is still a unsolved murder. And it just leads me to the reality that black girls and women are missing at a disproportionate rate every year. I mean, some 100,000 black women and children are missing in America. Some of them are presumed dead. Some of them may be into human trafficking. We just don't know. But the emphasis gets put on white women who are missing and murdered. And so there's been, you know, in the last, I'd say, even probably since our Jane Doe was found, that there has been an emphasis by the black community, and particularly black women, to raise this issue of missing women. And so there's a number of websites now that track women, that track the stories, and I think that's so important. And I hope to get a sister who has the website, Our Black Girls. She is a journalist and an activist, Erica Marie Rivers. She opened up that website in 2018, and on her own, she just keeps adding once people give her information. And so, that's what we have to do, because we can't depend on law enforcement to do it for us, because the black people in general in this society are not a priority, but particularly black women and children are not a priority. And so when they're gone, they're just gone unless the remains are found. And that's a sad situation. So again, that is an issue that we need to grapple with. And, you know, maybe we can find a way to still look at, now that we have lots of technology at our disposal than we had in 1983, that we can open up this investigation and find out who our little Jane Doe is. But, you know, one thing I say about a society, if you can't keep your children and elders safe, you need to check yourself. And, you know, I'm going to one dismal issue to another, and I'm talking about how our seniors in this last month or so have been disengaged from the homes and housing that they knew. And that's, I'm talking about the Heritage House, and I'm also talking about Northview living facility, and all the elders, particularly the black elders, because that's who it was, were displaced, and I would say traumatized, because if you're 80, 88, 85 years old, and all of a sudden lights go out, and you know, on a gurney being taken somewhere, and you don't know where, your family doesn't know where, that's got to be traumatic. It's got to be traumatic. But there are folks rallying around both of those, and I know people are saying, who's responsible, who's responsible? So with the Heritage House, the mayor's office has been involved with that, as a number of community-based organizations. I do believe half of those folks are still in hotel rooms, and they're seeking, you know, permanent residencies for them. But as you could imagine, at the last minute, think about what you would have to do if you had to leave your home. So that's not been an easy prospect. Now, the Northview Village, that's under state control. So I'm assuming that the Department of Human Services on the state level is doing the investigation. But, you know, something really needs to happen. I'm talking about some severe consequences to people who don't do what they're supposed to be doing by law and by humanity, and then up and just disappear or claim bankruptcy or whatever. So we got senior citizens who we need to be thinking about. We need to make sure they're safe, they're comfortable, they're getting the medical attention that they need. Because I can only imagine if at your age or more, think about your parents or your great-grandparents or your grandparents, and if they were in one of these facilities, what would you be doing? And so, you know, we need to find out how we can assist, even if we don't know anybody there. But I don't have any numbers, but I hope to get some for you so that people can assist in that effort. Because this is the way the community is supposed to come together. You know, those of us who practice the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles of unity, one of them is to make your brothers and sisters your problem and to solve them together. And so this is an issue that came back to back. First it was Northview that hit, and then came Heritage House. And so that to me means that we need to have a spotlight on senior citizens right about now, because they are being definitely underserved and, in my estimation, mistreated. So, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. You know, today is unfortunately a sad day because we don't have resolution to Baby Doe. But maybe that's coming in the future, so let's hope so. The other thing I wanted to talk about is that man who has won now four primaries. This is a man that is facing 91 criminal charges. He's facing up to 700 years of prison time if any of those charges stick. He's facing $500 million in legal penalties and millions more in legal fees. Yet this man is sweeping the GOP primaries. What's wrong with that picture, y'all? Trump is moving like he doesn't have a care in the world, and his people are backing him all the way, 200%. In South Carolina, and you know that's Nikki Haley's state, he won that. So she lost her state. She's the governor, and she couldn't win her state because the MAGA people said they wanted to teach her a lesson that she's supposed to stay at home meaning her state, and let the presidential candidate run, meaning Trump. So these people, when they say they want to make America great again, that's what they mean. They want to put women in their place. They want to put black folks back on some semblance of unpaid labor. And, you know, obviously been bold and loud about it. They want to send the immigrants back where they belong. So we got some issues here between now and November, y'all. And I don't know exactly how we gonna organize, because we got to organize to get people to the polls. But I dare say that we need to be thinking about the safety and security of our communities. And I've heard people, you know, talk about the doom and gloom. But when these people get riled up, these MAGA people, they really, as we saw on January 6th, they really are out of control. And so there are folks thinking about, how do I secure my family? How do I secure my neighborhood? Because we don't know what's going to happen when these people get out of control. And that's why I've written that regardless if Trump wins or loses, we're going to have some issues. It's not going to be pretty here in this country. So I just think we just need to be prepared for all scenarios, because this man is looking like he's going to be the Republican nominee and sweeping all of the delegate votes. Because here's one thing that happened on the way to him running again. Now, the Republican Party is now the MAGA party, in case you didn't know that. But along the way, Trump made sure that in states where there was proportionate distribution of those delegates, that it was changed to winner takes all. So, for example, in South Carolina, if Nikki Haley had won a percentage, she would get that percentage of delegates. But because she did not win straight out, all those delegates go to Trump now. So really, he's just going to be racking up as he goes, because there's no barriers or no Democratic hurdles for him to cross. And so that, too, is a scary proposition. But if you look at everywhere they've been, they've made sure that they close the door behind them. That's whether it's on the judicial side, the legislative side, or the executive branch. They've been doing gerrymandering so that they continue to get elected over and over again. They've piled the judges on, you know, all levels to make sure that their agenda gets protected. So, you know, this is not what democracy looks like. I think about that chant we do sometimes. This is what democracy looks like. Well, this is what democracy doesn't look like, where you have no regard for the majority. You have no regard for the special needs of constituent groups. And so MAGA and your boy Trump, we got to keep a keen eye on them and make sure that they don't make any headway that they haven't already made. We got some gains we have to maintain that we fought for, and they are trying to take all that away, which really leads me to this whole notion of local control. and this is happening all across the country. This is not just St. Louis, where the state is trying to take local control of the St. Louis Police Department back. Here's a situation where the majority of voters said, we want to be able to control our own police department, whose salaries we pay, whose budget comes out of our taxes. We think we should have some control over policies and procedures and the way they police in our neighborhoods. Well, the state has said, we're going to treat y'all like a plantation. We know what's best for you. And we are going to, if we can, take local control back of the St. Louis Police Department. And we will make sure that the spending that they need, the funds that they need, they have them, and that's to the detriment of anything else that we might be doing. And it's not just happening with local control of the police. Many of the things that we have fought for, all of a sudden they're rolling back. So I want us to pay attention to what's happening on the local level down there at City Hall, but we also have to pay attention to what's happening under the dome in Jeff City. And so far, you know, I don't know if we're winning or losing, but I know that we have a minority of folks, I'm talking about Democrats, I'm not even talking about black folks, down there, and they can do what they can do, and they should do what all they can do. But it is a uphill battle, and we have to know that, and we have to support them when they need us, and I would say in most cases they need us. So there are a number of lobby days that are coming up. Missouri's Against the Death Penalty have a lobby day coming up. I do believe the Voters Protection have a lobby day coming up. Empower Missouri might have a lobby day coming up. And I know for sure that MADP has a training, because you have to really understand the whole protocol and procedures up there at Jeff City in order to be effective. So they're going to have a training. So I would just say, if you want to be a part of that, and you should want to know how these folks operate, because I think it's one thing for somebody to sit and talk about what they do, but when you actually see it, it brings it really home quick, and it's a profound visual, because most of it you're looking at chambers of all white people, and mainly white men, and these are the people that are making decisions for the state. So they're making decisions for your family and mine. So I say you need to know what's going on. You need to know what they're doing, what they're thinking, and be able to intervene when you have to. But going down there with people who know the process and who know how to get in there and get you some talking points so you could talk to your elected official, that you we all need that. I had to have it when I first went down there, because first of all, it's hard to go down there. I should say it's hard for me to go down there, knowing what happens and knowing what the composition is and knowing those people really don't give a rat's ass about what's going on in North St. Louis, or in that case east side of Kansas City. But here they are making decisions for all of us. So I think we just need to sensitize them. We need to, you know, sometimes put some fire up under them, let them know that we're here, we're watching you. A lot of these things now are on Zoom, so you can check them out. You don't even have to go there anymore, but you can check them out. I know the Board of Alders, every Friday, you can go look at the Zoom. Afterwards, if you can't make it, you can actually go to the YouTube channel and check it out to see what they did, what they decided, and all that good stuff. So I want us to just be more involved in 2024, because we got to be woke. And it's interesting, like, people say woke is like, that term is kind of outdated, is no longer hip to use. But this is the thing, the MAGA folks are saying anybody that's woke is who they're going to be going after. So if woke means you're conscious, you are involved, you are concerned, you think democracy is the way to go, then they're going to have to do something with you. You are a dissident. And so I guess I'm going to go back to being woke, you know, if that's what that means, because anything that Trump is doing, I know, is not in my best interest as a black person or a woman. as a human being. So yes, I'm pretty much opposed to anything that he's got going. So let's take a, be aware of all the stuff that's going on locally, the local controls, some of these lobby days, see if you can make them. And if not, tune in to these sessions, these legislative sessions, so you can know what's going on. I remember when we had the two sisters here on, they talked about what's going on in Gaza. They talked about that situation. We had Sandra Tamari, and we also had Anna Balser. Well, Anna is now in Gaza, and she's doing dispatches. So she let me know that she's doing those dispatches. So far, she's in the countryside, but they've had some run-ins with the Israeli military. And, I want her to be safe. I want the people that she's with to be safe. And I think she will be, because she's an American Jewish person. But sometimes you just don't know. You can get caught in the crossfire. But she's doing dispatches, and I'm trying to figure out a way to bring those to you. But she's doing them throughout the day. And so I only do my show once a week. So I'm just trying to pull out some of the timely stuff. But I do want you to know that Anna Balser is in Gaza, and she's doing these dispatches. I'm going to see how I can share the link with people. Maybe I can do that on my website. When she was young, she took it upon herself to go there and find out what was going on for herself. And so she's doing it again and making sure that, the truth and the facts are coming out. Because it's getting more serious, and it doesn't seem to be an end in sight. Now, we know that on October 7th, there was a Hamas attack that killed like 1,200 people. Hamas took 240 hostages. But guess what's happening now? There have been 30,000 Palestinians killed, homes demolished. Of the 30,000, most of those were women and children. So, okay, 1,200 people, and then you kill 30,000, and the toll is mounting every day. So that's why most people who got any amount of passion, compassion, understand what's going on, even if they don't agree with either side or none of the sides, they're calling for a ceasefire. That's the appropriate response to this. Let's have a ceasefire and figure out next steps. But as long as the U.S. is providing military equipment to Israel, they are going to have the ability to do maximum damage to Gaza and the Palestinian settlements. They're pretty much talking about, driving them to other places. And, I remember one of the questions that somebody had on a show or something that said, why don't the Palestinians go to Egypt or some of the other surrounding countries because they're, trying to make space for them? And they were like, no, because then that becomes the permanent place, as opposed to sticking and staying in their homeland. And so to me, that's a point to be reckoned with. If you leave, it's just like if you leave your home and you go somewhere else to live and you just abandon it, somebody's going to move in there. Somebody's going to take shelter in there. And that's the way that the Palestinians feel about leaving those settlements and going somewhere other than staying in their land, that they will be giving it up forever. And I agree with that. I think that's part of the strategy. But let's do the ceasefire and see if we can figure out what's the next steps that meet the Palestinian people's needs and aspirations. So it's still tense over there. Again, I'm going to see if I can get Anna's link up on my website so that you can check in and see what's going on. She does videos as well as verbal stuff. So, that's a good contact to have. If you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we're just talking about some issues that are going on locally, statewide, and national that's been on my heart and mind. One of them that I want to talk about is the wrongful convictions, because we've had two brothers whose cases are being, now they're more than just being looked at. There is now a petition to free them, and that is Marcellus Williams and Christopher Dunn. One of them is from the county, so Wesley Bell did Marcellus Williams, and Gabe Gore put a petition in for Christopher Dunn. I'm going to tell you all, those are two of many people that have been wrongfully convicted that are inside our prisons. And why do I say that? I know people say everybody in prison is going to say they are innocent, but that's not the case. And only those people who've done prison reform or prison abolition work understand that. Everybody doesn't say that, because there's a certain integrity that folks have. But I'm going to tell you, for example, with the Christopher Dunn case, his case was based on the testimony of two kids. They were like 12 and 14 years old. Kids! This man has been in prison since 1991. They recanted. I'm pretty sure they were scared out of their wits by the prosecutor about what they would do if they didn't go along with the program, because we know that this is the MO of these rogue prosecutors. So you got somebody that was convicted on the testimony of two scared kids. See, if I was the prosecuting attorney, situations like that, that's an automatic pass card. You getting out. Because how was that prosecuted in the first place? And I can't help but think about the Nels Mosses of the world. Nels Moss had more cases overturned in appeals than probably anybody in the country. They've written about him. They've studied him in law school. This man, I would say that Gabe Gore needs to look at any cases that Nels Moss did, that prosecuted and got somebody in prison that's still there. And they need to take a serious look at those cases first. And, you know, to me, it doesn't even have to be a whole lot of investigation. Some of this stuff, and we saw this with the case that Judge Mason did, that he had televised. We saw that it doesn't take much to convict these people. So if you got somebody that was known to have gotten paid for their testimony, they got a few little perks, they got a lesser sentence, we need to pull those cases out, and we can dissolve those rather quickly. And because the backlog is horrendous, and I think people are still thinking they can get justice, and they should think that. There are both in public integrity units in both the city and the county. Two or three years ago, we passed a law that allows those prosecutors more power to deal with old cases, because that they claim that, you know, the state attorney claimed that they didn't have the right to do that when Kim Gardner tried to free up they got some backlogs that they need to tend to, because I keep thinking about, okay, there's karma for those prosecutors. I believe in karma, but sometimes the karma, you know, works slow, because we keep her busy. But George Peach, that dude, he was a prosecutor, probably the longest serving prosecutor. This man was law and order. He sent many a black man up to Jeff City. But guess how he was busted? He was busted soliciting a prostitute. They busted him in a hotel room somewhere out there by the airport. Then come to find out he was using a city checking account, confidential one, that he was put money in that only he controlled. This man was despicable. And not only that, he was taking money from a fund that was especially set up to aid victims of crime. Now, this is the top law enforcer in the city, and this is what he's doing. And he was held up. In fact, when he got busted, there were still all the people that said, we don't know if he should resign or still run. Huh? What? And I'm going to tell you, I think what was the most despicable about George Peach is that he used the name of a real person that had been wrongfully convicted, that we later got exonerated. He used his name when he was soliciting these prostitutes. See, karma, him just leaving that office and being ran out to Boise, Idaho, or wherever he ended up was not enough. But I think Buzzfowl got what he had coming to him. He died of a flesh-eating staph infection. And Buzzard Westfall was in the county. I remember him most with the Ellen Reasonover case. He knew all of those folks were lying up and down the line, and he still allowed that sister to be prosecuted, convicted, and serve time in prison for a murder that she did not commit. Didn't even know anything about it. So when it comes to these prosecutors, there have been attempts to bring them into the same kinds of accountability that anybody else has had. These people are committing crimes. And the crime is, well, to me, I call it actually conspiracy to commit murder, because some of them had conspired with these cases in order to rack up numbers. And some of these people have been executed across the land. And so they have they're sociopaths from what I can see. And I've worked with a number of them here in the city and the county. And they have no real concern for the people. And so all it's about has been, racking up. I'm a law and order person, and I'm going to get convictions by any means necessary. And they have. And so there are many people inside cages in Missouri who are wrongfully convicted and who are waiting for the opportunity to make their case. And some of them have groups behind them, like the Innocence Project or Centurion Ministries, but a lot of them just have been doing it on their own, which is, it's hard. It's hard, because just being in prison is hard, but to try to make your case of innocence is really, really, really difficult. So let's keep our eyes on the city and the county. We're looking for Marcellus Williams to be free, and we are looking for Christopher Dunn to see the light of day. And we're going to read a little something from Christopher later on in the show that he sent me, and I asked for permission for me to read it so that you could see just what's going through his mind. If you have missed any of the past shows, you can always catch up at JamalaRogers.com. We keep my web designer, he did a whole new thing with the website, so it's easier to find the shows now. So JamalaRogers.com, any past shows you missed or any ones that you want to rehear. We also, for those that have been done on Zoom, they're on my YouTube channel, so you can check those out. But it has been just an amazing journey to talk with people from all over the country, to hear what people are doing, to hear how they are serving their community, trying to make life better for those around them, and sometimes with no support, no funding. So we're glad for those people. And I'm next Wednesday we're gonna have Lynn Jackson come on, and Lynn is a descendant of Harriet and Dred Scott. And so she's been keeping that legacy alive, and we'll hear from her about all the good things that are going on with the foundation. And we got some other stuff coming up. So just make sure you tune in. And again, if you miss the shows at 1 o'clock, because they are in the middle of the day, you might be gigging, but they're always available at JamalaRogers.com. So one of the things I really want to talk about is the Organization for Black Struggle has a webinar coming up, and it's in celebration of Women's History Month. And it is the 30th anniversary of the making of No, the rape documentary. And that, you might think that 30 years for a documentary means that we've made some progress. And I think in terms of sexual assault, sexual violence, we have not made the kind of progress that I think we should have made, even with some of the high profile cases. You know, I still hear people saying, you know, had she not worn that dress, maybe she wouldn't have got raped, when rape has nothing to do with sex. Rape is all about control and power. And so if they were buttoned up from the neck with a turtleneck all the way down, it wouldn't have made any difference. And so we don't still have an understanding about the definition of rape. And so 30 years this documentary was made, and it is still relevant. It is still relevant. And so Sister Aisha Simmons is going to be joining us. This is virtual, so, you know, you could listen in the comfort of your home. But she is the person who put together the documentary. She is interviewing folks who have been rape victims and who talk about going through the trauma and how they got through the trauma. And when you register, it's free. When you register, she's made it so that we can share the actual documentary with you. So, and you probably need, I've watched it a couple of times. We actually showed it when it first came out. We screened it, 30 years ago. But when I was looking at it, I'm like, man, why are we still here? Why are sisters still suffering? Because one of the main reasons why, you know, sisters don't report it is because they go through the whole, shame game of, you know, black men are already victimized by the system. Why would I do it all over again? But that's not how we're going to get justice for everybody. That's not how we're going to create a safe environment for our girls and our women. And so there has to be some accountability. There has to be some restorative justice. But we got to wrap our heads around this issue and try our best to create an environment that's safe. So it's called Breaking the Silences About Healing From and Non-Carceral Accountability for Sexual Violence. And sometimes we think it only happens to the Bill Cosbys of the world, that they use their power and influence to do that. But this is so pervasive, you all. It's all over. And because we don't have stop measures to check it, it's just been running rampant. And so now we have, sexual predators in high school and even in middle school, because we didn't give young people the services and therapy that they needed when they were victimized. So it's a vicious cycle. And I think for the African American community, we need to come together and find a way to talk about it, because it's even hard to talk about. Even if you've had incest in your family, it is hard to talk about, because somebody has been wronged, but talking about it, people feel like will exacerbate the wrong, when if we find the right way to do that, it will not. So on this coming Sunday, March 3rd at 4 o'clock Central Standard Time,
is when Aisha Simmons will be joining us to talk about where we are with this particular struggle. But again, register, you have to register in order to be a part of the webinar, but the registration gives you access to that rape documentary, which normally you would have to pay for. You'd have to pay to rent it, or you'd have to pay to buy it. So this is free. You just need to register. And the registration link is on the homepage for the Organization for Black Struggle. So you could just do, put in the URL Organization for Black Struggle or obs.stl.org, and it will pop up so that you can register. But we really, really got to start a discussion about that. And it's not that we haven't done anything. You know, some of us been doing this for a long time. We've had, you know, the Take Back the Night marches. I reminded somebody like last week at a program that we shut down a black business, because it was a lounge and they refused to open up a door after hours when people left and one of their patrons was raped. And we just, you know, the community said, well, you don't need to be in business around us. If you can't, you know, open up the door or call somebody or call the police when this woman is screaming for her life, then maybe you should be somewhere else. So there's been lots of activity. I just don't think it's had the impact it should have had. And we should not be having some of the situations that we have now where people are still supporting, you know, pedophiles and rapists. I mean, look how long it took us to bring R. Kelly down. I mean, there were women who were like flocking to his concerts when he was at that point a known pedophile. So it's something about our understanding of what rape is and who's a victim that we need to have a deep conversation about. So that's going to be Sunday, March 3rd at 4 o'clock. It is free, open to the public, not just for women. And in fact, we're hoping that men are part of the conversation. And I was trying to think of some men that are doing anti-violence work. And Thadi Kennedy used to do it, and he passed last year, so I don't know. So if you know some brothers who are specifically doing anti-rape or anti-violence work with men, let me know, because I'm sure after this program, people will be asking for that. And so we want to make sure that when we open up these wounds, we have ways to effectively and safely close them. So that's coming up tonight at 5:30. They're going to be showing the film A Backpack Full of Cash, and that's at Vashon High School, 3035 Cass. And this is a film, it's part of a series of films that are going to be shown, but this film is going to explore the real cost of privatizing Americans' public schools. And as you know, that's been an ongoing struggle in some places like New Orleans. After Hurricane Katrina, they took the opportunity, or I should say exploited the opportunity, and made all the schools charter schools. And so you just can't imagine the catastrophe that has caused. So, you know, we heard from one of those teachers here when I had the round table of public school teachers who were talking about teaching during COVID. She talked about what it was like to teach in a district that's all charter. So you know, if you've been hearing different things about charter and you've been hearing different things about public schools, what they ain't or are not doing, this is a place that probably you should come and look at the film and then be part of the discussion and ask questions. So Backpack Full of Cash. That's this evening at 5:30 at Vashon, and the doors open at 5. So yeah, lots of things going on in our community. Even as we are leaving Black History Month, we got Women's History Month coming up, and there is a ton of stuff again happening that women are doing to lift up our contributions here and in this society that have been repressed, erased. And we're saying, just like black folks, we ain't having it. We're here to stay, and we want to demand respect and for what we've done and what we are going to do, because we're not going anywhere. Last week I went to, I had announced this on the show, Post-Racial America, which was a production that was put on by Call to Conscience, and boy, was it provocative. It was pretty amazing. It was a lot of, they had these various scenarios, maybe about 10 or 12, short scenarios. And one of them that stood out for me was a scenario where five black friends were, celebrating New Year's Eve. And so they were toasting and they had the glasses of champagne, and somebody had brought out a box full of, masks, white masks. And they started putting on these masks and immediately were transformed into white people. Well, there were only four masks. And so one black person didn't get a mask. And so I don't need to tell you how that ended. It did not end well for him, because they feared for their life. Somebody went and got the gun, said they needed to stand their ground, and that brother was shot dead. So, I mean, it was a short, compressed view of life in America. And so I just hats off to the brothers and sisters that put that on from, you know, Call to Conscience, because they did a hell of a job with that production. And it ran for three all weekend. It was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And each scenario was, you know, pretty profound, one better than the rest. But that one stuck out to me, because I'm like, wow, that is real. And they had the verbiage, the way the white folks talk. I mean, the transformation was pretty, pretty radical, happening right in front of you. And you just felt so bad for that brother, because he kept saying, "Remember me, I'm your friend." And then he starts saying, "Well, somebody give me a mask. I need a white mask," because he felt like if he was going to be the only one out, odd man out, maybe he should get one and start acting like white people too. So it was so deep on many different levels that I'm thinking, yeah, just that scene alone is worth having a conversation about. But you all know I'm a big fan of theater, black rep, you know, any theater, black theater. So those folks I know and love, Fannie Levy is one of them. She was the producer of this. And so, yeah, it was very thought provoking. So this is Jamala Rogers, and I've been here. You've been listening to me talk about the issues that I have been thinking about and feeling really bad about. And I started off with talking about, you know, the Jane Doe situation, where we still have a child that nobody has ever claimed was missing, and we've never found her head. So for me, that is an ongoing issue that we got to be concerned about. And when I started preparing for this show, I'm thinking I need to call the police department's missing person and see where the case is, if they've gotten any leads, if they've gotten any, you know, it should be an ongoing investigation, but has there been anything that has come to the surface that we know this child is? But there is a documentary, you all, about this case. It came out a couple of years ago. A local person, I'm trying to remember his production company, but it's 314 something. But he interviewed some of the kids at that time. He interviewed a forensic scientist. It was very well done. And it's, I believe that's going to be on, it's called Precious Hope, St. Louis's Baby Jane Doe. And it's available on Roku, YouTube, and Amazon Fire. I think I saw that on Roku. But it's 314birdstudios.com. So if you want more information about that, that's where that documentary came from. So, yeah. We don't want to forget that baby. She's one of us. And we got to figure out what happened to her, and reconnect her with her family, wherever they might be. I'm going to end, and I'm asking my good friend
Bob Hansman, who you hear after me, to help me with the piece that came out of the mind of Christopher Dunn. And it's a little bit of satire, but we're going to try to make it work. So let's see what we can do. So Bob Hansman is here, and we have our parts, and so we're going to see if we can make it so that you understand what's going on. So hold tight.
So is this mic on now?
Say something.
I'm talking something. Chris Dunn, from the mind of Chris Dunn.
Okay, I hear you. I don't know which mic it is, but I got both of them up.
Okay, so you can hear me.
I hear you.
Okay, all right. So you got the first line.
So this is from Christopher Dunn, who was wrongfully convicted in 1991. And, you know, I correspond with him just to, you know, make sure we know what's going on with him. He's staying upbeat and positive. But he is actually, as most of these prisoners do, inspiring you, because they are behind bars. They have very limited liberties, rights, and all of that. But they seem sometimes to do more than what we're doing out here. And so this is a introduction of hope and justice, and they're meeting for the first time.
Hey, my name's Hope.
Nice to meet you, Hope. I'm Justice. I heard a lot about you.
Well, same here. I've heard a lot about you, too. What brings you here?
Well, I was brought in to be identified.
Really? Wow, me too.
Well, by whom?
I don't know. Some guy, he said he's been looking for me.
Wow. Sounds familiar. Okay, you four, look forward.
Well, he knows me.
Well, he knows me, too. Justice, Hope, you're free to go. This Christopher Dunn wasn't able to identify you. He said he hadn't seen you two before in a day in his life.
Well, too bad for Payne and Fate, but they know the routine by now. It's back to the cells for them.
So I hope you all understood what he was doing. His thing is, like, he's never had a chance to meet Hope and Justice. All he knows is Pain and Fate. And so we're hoping that changes for our brother, our good brother, who served over 30-something years in prison. We hoping that soon he will see the light of day. It won't be justice, that's for sure. But he will be out and old, young enough still to plot his life and live with his wife and family. So this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I appreciate your support of not just this show, but all the shows here at Black Radio Hall of Fame. And we'll see you next week.
So refreshing to hear you just let him have it. Oh God, it scares me who we're living around.